Hey everybody, welcome back to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. I have a familiar guest on the show, as you got to hear from him last week, but we have Jim Davis back on the show. We had such a good conversation last week that we kind of forgot some of the important parts that I really wanted to tease out from Jim. So we already got into concussions. We got into kind of the mental side of recovery. Today, we're going to dig into kind of what's the bedrock foundation that Jim puts through his athletes when it comes to recovery. So a lot more in depth on eating, moving, and sleeping. Jim, just a quick reminder, he is a former professional football player. He's been a champion, powerlifter, nationally recognized coach, author, and speaker. He's been honored as a NASA National Coach of the Year, as well as a runner-up the following year. His research focuses on human development, psychology through sport, and the human connection is what keeps him coaching. So, let's dig into it.
You're listening to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. Each week, we explore how to recover more efficiently from training so you can work out harder and realize your full potential. This is the Science of Sports Recovery podcast.
Jim, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me back, man.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I loved the connection we made last time. And I think we covered a lot of good stuff. But at the end of it, we're like, you know, we didn't talk too much about the recovery, what we had on our list here. So that's why we're bringing you back. We kind of went through your athletic history before. So if somebody's listened to this now and they're like, who is this Jim Davis guy? Go back and listen to the last episode. You'll get the full rundown of who he is, what he's all about. So I want to just dig this one, kind of go deep into your philosophy when it comes to recovery, because I know you have like a foundation and then you kind of build from there. Let's start at the foundation. And I know eat, sleep, and move are kind of your big three pillars. Let's start with sleep. Like, what do you see? Well, first of all, why is sleep important? And then we'll get into like how you actually make this happen in a busy athlete's life.
Yeah, I think, and you pushed me as to far how far you want to go into the like the actual science, but I think like there's no question that on the whole, we can talk about athletes, coaches, parents, communities. We don't respect sleep enough, and I've got an article I'll share with you. It's title is A Sleep Deprived Nation, and the truth of the matter is that we are. You know, we're sleeping fewer and fewer hours every decade or so. The national average drops just a touch, and on average we sleep significantly less than the CDC, the National Sleep Foundation, any governing body who looks at this sort of thing. We sleep
less. Do you know what the average is?
What's that? Do I know what the average is? Yeah. I think the last time I looked it up, it was like 7.2, 7.4, somewhere in there. I can find that actual number for you. I can find the number for you if you'd like. But the short version, let me forget it. I'll send it to you or I'll look it up before we're done talking today. But the short version is we've got a range, and that range is 8 to 10. And people think, well, I got to get 8 hours of sleep. Well, 8 hours of sleep is sort of like a baseline recommendation. It's almost like you're drinking 8 glasses of water a day. These are like easy mantras, like, hey, don't forget to drink 8 glasses of water, sleep for 8 hours, and wash behind your ears. The real truth is that the amount of sleep we need is different person to person and day to day. So what we need is a lot more self-awareness. Research-based awareness, and then from there, self-awareness about what it is that we need. For example, we work at the Good Athlete Project. We work with primarily youth, high school, and college athletes. Well, youth, high school, and college athletes, every one of those groups needs more than 8 hours. If you hit 8 hours, you'd be at the very bottom of the CDC recommendations for how much you ought to sleep. So the idea, you know, plenty of college and pro athletes are aiming at 9, 10 hours per night, and they don't waver from that. So the idea that the nation at large is on average below that is unfortunate. And then we can dig into the complexities of, you know, the how and why. But the truth is, the average is thrown oftentimes by really necessary labor and shift work. And you know, you've heard of all this. Like our country can't run without nurses, doctors, truck drivers, yeah, legitimately, totally. Like people operating 24/7. So we got a problem. We've got a problem. Yeah. And I think there's a whole laundry list of health concerns that ripple out from that one issue.
So before we kind of get into the science behind like what happens when you don't sleep, let's kind of dig into just like what would be best for the person listening. So like if they're trying to gauge, do I need 8, do I need 10, you know, do I need 11 or 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
What are some things that if they're doing in their regular life that they might need to more sleep because of?
It's a great question. And the answer is that, okay, so we mentioned eat, move, sleep is sort of our bedrock, the foundational level of the framework that we use for evaluation. And as you move up, we get into things like stress, communication, the way you relate to others, all this kind of stuff. So I bring that up because just about anything can change your sleep need. You know, obviously, if you're an athlete, you've done more damage on a cellular level throughout the course of the day. More recovery is needed, and that recovery happens when you sleep. So if you are, like, let's just say, so again, I'll just go CDC numbers. They recommend adolescents go 8 to 10. Well, if you're an athlete and you're trying, you know, if you're taking it even mildly seriously, then there's no question you're at the top end of that scale. And that might seem wild to some people. I'll use as an opportunity to jump right into, you know, the implementation, because like especially athletes who have extra practice demand, extra demands on their time, they're like, how could I ever get 9-10 hours of sleep, and how could I make it regular? That's a legitimate question. So I'm just sort of knocking on the door of that. We won't go down that road fully, but the truth is that's what they need. Anything that throws off homeostasis significantly will likely require more rest on the back end. Any stressor requires recovery. So that could be psychological stress sometimes, definitely in the context of our conversation, physical stress.
So the next question is, as athletes, we're familiar with like training your body to adapt to a certain stimulus and then improving on that. So there could be this train of thought, and I've thought this myself before, that, well, what if I just gradually get less sleep and I'm training my body to, sleep better, like sleep deeper and get more out of that sleep? And like, will your body ever adjust to that?
That's a really good question. It's funny that you say that, because I thought that too at one point. And the answer is not, it doesn't really work like that. What sometimes will happen. So there's two pieces to that question. I'm going to address one part that stood out to me, especially when I was transitioning from wannabe professional athlete to just working professional. I thought the same thing. I was like, adaptation is part of what I've done. I'll get used to this, is what I often thought. And what I found, in a state of like, you know, where chronic sleep deprivation, I know now that that's what it was. What I found was, you know, the body finds a way, the body prioritizes, like the sensors of the body are fantastic and well-tuned to the needs of the body. So what was happening to me is I wasn't necessarily sleeping better, but I would drop into deep, heavy sleep faster. And that was essentially my body's way of saying, like, because what happens is over the course of a night, you move through stages of sleep. And I'm sure you've heard of this. And there's a lot that's documented, still a lot of it's theoretical. But in different stages, like when your brain is in an alpha wave state, like there's like, you know, what are we doing right now? Are we consolidating memories, making sense of things from the day? Are we pruning there's a lot of cognitive processing theoretically going on in those states. And then as you move into the later stages of sleep, that's when the real deep you know, hormones kick in, your body starts to recover on a physical cellular level. What I found is that the more sleep deprived I am, the faster my body essentially says, forget memory consolidation. We're going to boom, drop to the bottom of this, prioritize recovery and get healthy. Because, you know, if you don't think well, you still got a shot at the next day. But if you go long enough, in a state of chronic sleep deprivation, health outcomes can be dramatically impacted. Yeah. So
you said skip the memory consolidation.
Want to overspeak. I don't know that that's a fact. What I do know though, is that the body finds a way to get to the next day. You know what I mean? We do this all the time. It's like, it's like fight or flight response. Like when you're scared, say, so like you're walking through the woods and you see a bear. Yeah. There's not a lot of, you're not debating philosophy. The worries you had from work, they go away. In fact, like, you know, resources that normally would have been potentially shunted to like reproduction, all of that's shut down. And all of the body's resources are focused on one thing. It's get away from the threat.
Yeah.
That's a dramatic way of saying this sort of thing. Like in a state of sleep deprivation, your body is in a state of threat. There are alarm bells going off. If it's dramatic enough and it continues for long enough, there are alarm bells going off in your body. It's why you feel terrible the day after you pull like an all nighter or whatever the situation might be. So I'm not saying that when you're sleep deprived, you skip memory consolidation. I'm just saying theoretically, the body will prioritize cellular recovery, you know, staying healthy, getting to the next day before any sort of cognitive process. I mean,
totally, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So that theory makes sense, and it's kind of playing out in my life. I can tell, you know, because I just had my first child 4 months ago, so sleep has been, you know, kind of one of the first things to go, and stuff. So I can tell if I go a day or two or three less sleep, less quality sleep. Mm-hmm. The first thing to go is kind of the mental state, like the mental sharpness and clarity. Yeah. Like I can still go and work out. I can still run, probably have a lot less motivation to do so, mm-hmm. but physically I'm still there. Mentally, it feels like it goes first.
Jace, I want to hear more about that because you're exactly right. And I'm glad that you're sort of self-aware enough to tune into that. Because what you're mentioning is something that is happening almost all the time. At least that's what I believe. That number that I mentioned, that sub eight number, you know, the national average is in the sevens. Okay. But it's not in the fours, right? If we were in the fours, we would be totally debilitated as a nation. But if we're in the sevens, like you said, you can get through a day. Right. You can operate, like, you know what I mean? You can be there. But tell me that phrasing again. You're just not functioning as high as you otherwise would have. Does that feel right?
Yeah, I think like the first thing to go is mental clarity.
Sure.
And you just kind of feel a little bit more in a fog. You need caffeine to help. For me, it's like caffeine helps motivate because like I'm just not to the level where I need to be, or I guess maybe arousal might be the right word, not like in a sexual way, but arousal to the task at hand. Yeah. You know, you have to have some sort of motivation, you know, short-term motivation to go do a task. And that seems to be lacking unless I have that extra caffeine that, you know, helps me kind of get over the edge and wake up, you know, more or less. But the physical aspect is still there for me. It's just the mental part that makes it a lot harder to think.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. When we do a lot of workshops and surveys, both on the team level and on the professional level in this area, and you're describing is really common. Like that's what a lot of people say. Fog, you know, brain fog is usually one of the first things. Clarity, ability to sort of sustain focus. And it's funny because what we find, and you're a perfect example of this, is like high achieving folks, like people who are motivated to do great things, are sometimes the most at risk for this sort of low-level chronic sleep deprivation, which is like, you know, you see like graduate students and professors and doctors, and you know, they're the ones that are, I mean, they're sleep deprived often. Once you understand what the degraded state does to your cognitive capacity, to your ability, your recall, your ability to retain information and pull at existing memory banks, you're like, well, I got to read 300 pages today as a graduate student or whatever, or this, you know, over the course of these days, but, and I'm going to stay up late to do it. But as I stay up late, I am, not only am I not focusing as well now, but I'm predisposing myself to tomorrow also not being able to focus. You know, it's this really challenging ripple effect. And you mentioned a big one. I'm holding a cup of coffee right now, but, it's funny. If you watch, Here, this is a kind of a toy theory I'm playing with, but if you assume that the amount of Starbucks locations is somehow related to the total amount of caffeine consumption by our population, which doesn't seem like a terrible stretch, you know, there's a market for, so you watch the rise of Starbucks locations and you watch the sort of downfall, just basically you have to change the scale for the graph to be compelling, but the amount of the national sleep average going down, these things are almost inverting, you know, one beside the other. And the truth is we trick ourselves, I think, through these other strategies, like with caffeine, to thinking that we are well rested, but we are not. And
we're staying busy. Like you do a lot of low level tasks that keep your body busy, but your mind's just not there. And I think that ultimately, like, one, we talk about burnout a lot on the show, and that's kind of my story through college, is burned out from my sport a little bit, and well, a lot of it, and I think sleep has a lot to do with that. And like I can tell you know, based kind of early signs of burnout back in college to, you know, now I have a lot going on with, I started this podcast production company. You know, I obviously have this podcast. I just had a baby and stuff. So there's a lot going on and it's all stuff that I love, you know, so I should be on top of the world. But I can sense sometimes, I can sense the early stages of burnout. The only thing that keeps me going right now is I nap every afternoon. And then that like resets my like motivation and stuff. Otherwise I would just kind of like, that afternoon is so hard for me if I don't get that in. So I want to ask you about napping. Like, what's your thoughts on napping as far as a tool to supplement nightly sleep or a tool for recovery?
I think napping is amazing. I think napping is, it's the healthy alternative to coffee. And unfortunately it's just stigmatized. You know, if we were a purely science driven country or people, not forget, I don't mean to say country, just humans in general. If we were willing to confront, some truths of science, we would say, starting work at a certain hour is silly. We would say stigmatizing naps and things like that is silly. Like, there's so much that we do that's counterproductive and counter even to our organizational missions oftentimes. And that's where, that's some of the, you know, we do education consulting, and when we go into a place, the first thing we start with is, does your behavior match your goal? We do these like very purpose driven workshops. Does your behavior match your goal? And to get to the napping idea, if on a very basic rudimentary level, if you say, as you're the CEO and you want your people to be happy, healthy, well, and important for the company, productive. Okay. Let's just say you want that. Well, there are studies that show, I remember this because of the amount of twos involved, that, if you take a nap around 2 o'clock for about 20 minutes around 2 o'clock, you're about 20% more productive down the back stretch of your day. And it's funny because if you were to go to one of those CEOs, not say that you're talking about sleep, not say that you're talking about naps, and say, hey, I got this pretty much free thing, you know, that that all it's going to require is some professional development within your building. I've got this free strategy that is going to improve productivity across your workforce by 20%. Are you interested? But, you know, I think conceptually people are like, yeah. But then when you tell them it requires 20 minutes away from work, people, you know, people bristle and it doesn't sit right with them. You know, and I think it's largely whole, due. Go ahead.
It's the whole concept of regrouping kind of before pushing again. And you take this like into your workout regimen. I see a lot with, especially in like the high school age where high school students, they're really motivated and they want to make it to professional level and they're fed all this like rah rah, work as hard as you can, as long as you can, you know, wake up at 4 a.m., you know, do this, eat only, whatever. And that's all good stuff, good intention stuff.
Right, right.
But when it comes at the expense of actually recovering from that, that's when we get into trouble. Same thing like with this nap idea. It's hard for those athletes to take a step back and be like, hey, if I'm not doing anything today, like if I'm not working, you know, my butt off today, I'm going backwards, not forwards, where that's not actually the case. I see that with napping as well.
Yeah. Well, you're right. And you're right on all of those ideas. I think the truth is that's why does your behavior match your goal is such an important part of who we are as an organization. It's like, maybe some people need to be kicked in the butt. You know, if motivation is low, then those sort of like hype videos, like, you know, motivation has its place. It's just recognizing what the problem is. You have to see the problem clearly if you want to solve it well, you know, if you want to be successful. And I think too often we cut and paste this grind mentality on people, assuming that lack of motivation is the sole concern. And we don't teach people the right way to navigate that. And even every individual person. So I'll say this, because I've written about that before. I've spoken about it before. I'm about to cuss. I think some of those, I don't know what you'd call them, influencers, I suppose, who I believe are well-intended, are just spewing like dangerous bullshit to young people. And I have one guy in particular who, like, I think I believe in him. I think he's probably changed people's lives for the better on the whole. But he's preaching things. Like, there's a direct quote in one of his speeches that's like, you've got to be willing to give up sleep. You got to go 4 hours a night on sleep. Like, how can you, like,
yeah.
And that's such a,
you hear that a lot.
It's an unbelievably dangerous concept. It's silly. Like, it doesn't make any sense from a scientific perspective. They're trying to motivate, and I get that totally. But what happened? It's almost like worst case scenario, they actually listen to you, you know, and maybe you get more done in a day, a couple times. But all of a sudden, and this is real, all of a sudden you've got someone who is, like you mentioned, burning out, at far greater risk of mental health concerns. Okay, like far greater.
Yeah.
And that you can break down, they call it YRBS, Youth Risk Behavior Survey. You can break that down on a national level and compare sleep deprivation. It's low levels of sleep. It's not true sleep deprivation the way they measure it, but that to all the mental health concerns, including like feeling sad and hopeless, making a plan to attempt suicide and actually trying to harm themselves. So I'm sorry to just throw that out there. I hope that's not. It doubles the risk in almost every category being sleep deprived. So these guys who are doing this are. It frustrates me a lot.
It's a slow creep, too. It's not like. It's not something that you notice right away.
Yeah.
But like you gradually get less productive.
Yep.
In your work or in your workouts, you know, even like we talked about before on this show about intentionality and what you're doing in your workouts. Like you can, there's working out and, you know, knowing what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're doing it. And then there's working out. That's just going through the motions.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm supposed to move my arm like this or whatever, you know, and those are going to have two different impacts on your performance later, you know, one being you need that intentionality with it. And I think you just slowly lose that when you're in that sleep deprivation and stuff. So
you're right.
But let's get into how to get sleep,
how to do it
a busy life, how to make the most of, you know, the sleep that you're going to get, prioritizing that kind of stuff. What do you talk about with your athletes on how to do this?
So we go through a few steps. The first one is just identifying purpose. I think that's one of the things that people so often forget to do. They say, well, I'm process oriented, I'm purpose driven, I got goals, all that kind of stuff. That's fine. But I don't think people take enough time to really think through that, and to no fault of their own. We talked on the last podcast, I've been to graduate, you know, I've got multiple degrees. And I say that now, I'm not bragging. I got a lot of student debt. That's all I'm saying. But I never throughout the course of my education learned to do this stuff well. So I'm both critiquing and forgiving everyone who's like, I'm goal directed here, but doesn't understand the sort of ancillary, yeah, like the components, the factors, all the things that go into it. So what I would say is the first step we do always is, you know, going back to that idea, does your behavior match your goal? Well, first we have to identify what your goal is. Oftentimes that includes addressing the fact that goals are not ends in and of themselves. They're sort of signposts along the way to the fulfillment of a bigger purpose. And that's true. And I think that's totally healthy in a psychological way from all angles. So identifying what some goals are and working with someone to say, okay, this is sort of your cluster of goals. Can we pull out a more overarching purpose from that? So purpose, goals that are going to kind of let you know if you're on the right path. That's really essential. And then the phrasing of that thing is important. Does your behavior match your goal? So the next part of it, I said first part is goal. Second part is your behavior. So it's analysis, not of necessarily the world at large, but what are you doing? Like what are the steps you're taking to move down that path? What from what is under your control are you looking closely at? What are you doing well? And what needs to be adjusted? That's a lot. I haven't even gotten to your how do you sleep well question, but like you really can't get to it until you do that more base level work. Because if you don't do that base level work and then do some work to understand how sleep is going to influence that purpose, that process, all that kind of stuff, then then it doesn't click at 2 a.m. that, okay, I need to go to bed because of all these, you know what I mean? The rationale is not there. People don't like being told what to do. People like making decisions that align with the outcomes that they want for themselves.
Yeah. So I think you did answer the question, okay, because it's not necessarily like everybody knows how to go to sleep. You go to your bed, you lay your head on your pillow, and then, you know, you
go to sleep. Yep, that's right.
The problem comes in with the motivation to actually do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what you were touching on, is the purpose of, like, if you know the purpose of your life at this point, you know, cause goals, purposes, life goals change. But if you know like what you're working to, and then you understand like, hey, sleep is a part of this, then you're more likely to have that intrinsic motivation to go and do it rather than somebody like your coach saying, you know, go do it. So if you're a coach and you're listening to this, rather than saying, hey, make sure you're in bed by 10 o'clock tonight, you know, or you hear this all the time on like trips,
yeah,
where like, this is a business trip, you know, go to bed at X, you know, time.
I'm going
to walk the halls and make sure everybody's going to bed. You know, I was on a team that we didn't need that in college. Like, we were all purpose driven. We knew like we're going to nationals for a specific purpose. We've worked, you know, X amount of time for it. Like, it wasn't that we needed that external motivation. We already done that work of, hey, this night of sleep is important for the race to come, for the training to come. So when you can connect those dots, it's easier to go to bed.
If you stick around and listen to enough of our episodes here on the Science of Sports Recovery podcast, you'll notice a common theme of importance of mobility in recovery and injury prevention. That's why I recommend checking out the Ready States Virtual Mobility Coach to help you improve your mobility, recoverability, and injury prevention. The Ready State is a brainchild of coach and athlete Dr. Kelly Starrett, who you can learn more about on episode 13. His Virtual Mobility Coach program helps athletes understand the importance of recovery, pain relief, and self-care. In other words, it helps fix the recovery side of training so you can keep seeing results from your workouts. His program will guide you through the same mobilizations used on athletes in the NFL, NHL, and MLB, provide custom tools for pain relief, give you customized pre and post exercise mobilizations based on your training and sports schedule, and deliver daily mobilizations to keep you on track to achieve your goals. You put your heart and soul into your workouts. Make sure you get the most of them by going to thereadystate.com/Jace. Again, that's thereadystate.com/JASE. The link will also be in the show notes. Now, back to the show.
You're totally right. I think that's and I'll throw out there, just like, I hope any coaches listening to this, we have a podcast as well. We talk about sleep all the time and things like that, and goal-directed behavior and how to get your team on that page. I'd throw out there that if any coaches want to, you know, to some, it sounds really easy to get everyone on the shared purpose and then remind them to go to bed. It's more challenging work. So if anyone wants to, if anyone's interested in a workshop, that's literally the stuff that we do, is we work with teams and coaches to set that roadmap up, because you are exactly right. It's like, I can't tell you how many times a coach, you know, I think about college football games, sleeping in a hotel and the coach saying exactly that, you know, lights out at blank. And look, discipline or fear of punishment has never made me sleep well, and we're just using sleep as a thing here, but it's also never really changed me for the long term in any way. You know, the behavioral shifts that we all go through, they happen, like you use the word intrinsic motivation. It always happens from the inside out. You know, you hear this all the time. What kind of athlete are you when no one's looking? That's not just a cliche. That's a really legitimate question. And I want to say that I would, to any athletes who might be listening to this, forgive yourself if you're not there right away. Because that's something that can certainly be built. I mentioned that I went through two rounds of grad school, never knowing how to do this. I don't know if this is interesting, but it might be helpful and shine some light on some ideas. My last project in grad school was all about how exercise influenced cognitive states and affective states, mood, focus, wakefulness. That's where I was. How does exercise influence those things? When I finished that project, I started looking at all the confounding variables, and the most powerful of them all was sleep. So, and I say that because it wasn't until a year or two out of my second round of graduate school that I really started to prioritize sleep in my own life. And it has been one of the biggest game changers that I've experienced. But it didn't happen in any real way until I understood it, prioritized it, aligned it with the things that I was trying to achieve. Only then could I find the discipline to do it.
So how much?
Yeah.
How much sleep did you start getting after that?
I aim at 9. I aim at 9 hours. And I say that because, there's that idea that you hit what you aim for oftentimes, but I don't hit 9 that often, but I aim at 9. I think, you know, I aim at 9. It's rare these days that I don't get 8. That said, it doesn't mean that I'm asleep for 8 hours, you know, because now we really can get into like sort of the nitty gritty habits of sleep, you know, different things like, what did I eat that day? When was the last time I had caffeine? What did I have for dinner? Did I have like a heavy, fatty dinner and my body's processing it, and therefore my internal body temperature is up and I'm having a hard time falling to sleep. It's summer right now in Chicago and it's getting humid and warm. The temperature of the room matters. So there's all these other sort of factors, but I'm pretty disciplined to this, at least I call it a sleep opportunity, to give myself minimum 8 hour sleep opportunity. And I find that if I do that regularly enough, that I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I think most people, I'm not going to speak for most people. For me, I always, like, especially with this nap routine that I had, I always struggled with identifying myself as lazy for taking a nap. Or identifying myself as lazy for, and I think that goes back to the whole culture around it. So it's not true. You're actually, smarter, more productive afterwards, and I've learned that. Like, I can take a nap for 15, 20 minutes, and then my afternoon, it's just like my morning instead of, less productive. But I want to get into the quality on that. How to improve your quality of sleep. And I've heard this quote, I think it was actually from Nick Littlehales, who's the sports sleep coach. We've had him on the show back in episode 10, 9, 10, 11, somewhere in there. He says that the quality of your sleep is actually determined by what you do when you're awake. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like this mindset shift where it's like, once you're asleep, you're asleep. You can't control that, right? It's what you do leading up to it, what you do during the day, that's going to affect the quality of your sleep. So I'm curious to know from you, what are some things that you can do before bed, in your opinion, or what you've seen work to improve the quality of sleep, help get to sleep faster, et cetera?
Yeah. Well, I think Nick is exactly right. I think that's right. It's okay. A few quick things. Number one, going on Nick's idea, the more active you are during the day, the more your body's just going to naturally gear itself toward sound quality rest. And that's something that's really come up through the pandemic, actually, is, more and more sedentary behavior and more sleep concerns. And there's all sorts of, you don't know which direction that's going in. There are people stressed out from the pandemic and they're not sleeping well, and that's why. But one very real factor is that if you're sedentary all day, your sleep drive will be lower. And if you're active, you stay in this sort of regular, very human embodied, set of inclinations, I suppose. So active during the day, you're hungry when you're hungry, active during the day, when you get tired, you go to sleep. So that's the first one. Be active. Caffeine past, I've said noon now. I don't have caffeine past noon if I can help it. The latest I will go, even if I'm having like a real grind of a day and I just got work, I still won't touch it past two. That's like the absolute latest I'll go. And I'm just like religious about that. I used to think, and I think it was inspired by my grandma who used to have a cup of coffee after dinner or something like that. But I used to go, I'll have a small cup at 4 or 5 just to finish, just to finish out the day. So I'm very thoughtful about caffeine consumption. So we've hit two things: active during the day, monitor caffeine consumption, the sort of food that you eat relative to when you eat it, matters. So, if you think about this, like your body ratchets down, like it turns down the temperature when you move toward rest. So the more you ask it to do from, the digestive system to do, at or near sleep, it's sort of counterintuitive from the food coma idea. Cause if you have like a big, heavy, fatty meal late, you're processing that and a couple things are happening. You're getting nutrients, including sugars and things like that, that are getting into the bloodstream, probably don't hit until, say you go to bed at 11, maybe they're not hitting till 12:30, 1 a.m. So it's this, there's a latency stage there, but then all of a sudden you've got a spike in blood sugar. Also your internal core temperature, because it's trying to break down all this food, is higher. So I definitely try not to eat heavy late. That's a really important one. That's a good transition. Yeah.
Would you suggest having a heavier breakfast, lighter dinner, like kind of reversing what normal America does? Or does, as long as you're having your dinner, you know, 2-3 hours before bed, does it really matter?
That's a really good question. I think it totally context dependent. I would say that we're tapping on one of the most complicated parts of that bedrock concept, eat, move, sleep. The eat part is one of the most complicated because it's so, so individualized. I don't eat heavy early. I eat very light on the front half of the day. I have tried to develop some self-awareness around like you call it like a late breakfast or early lunch. But for me, I mean, a ribeye is like my favorite dinner. And I just make sure that I'm not eating it at 10:30 at night, you know, so I don't, I don't necessarily front load the day. I don't technically intermittent fast either. Though proponents of intermittent fasting might say that I do because I don't have a big heavy breakfast. So yeah, that's super individualized. So I'm not sure that I could.
Cause I think culture has kind of pushed to the heavy dinner. You know, we talked about like, it's just harder to bring a big lunch to work. And then if you have a big lunch, you naturally want to take a nap afterwards because your body's working on digesting that and stuff, which, you know, in some cultures they have a siesta, which
right.
I'm all for. After
I lived in lunch. Spain, that's man, actually I get it. Yeah,
yeah, that's actually what I do. I have my lunch and then I take my nap.
It's great.
So, anyways, I have 5 meals a day.
Okay,
I have breakfast,
smaller and spread out.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I ever like. Sometimes I gorge myself on like dinner if it's at a party or something that's really good, you know, or we're going out to eat. Just because I like food, I like taste and it's enjoyable, you know, and I think it's okay to have that experience as long as you're not, you know, doing it every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, maybe I sidetracked you there. I think you were going into.
No, I think you're right. I think just to put a pin in that idea, first of all, yeah, I think it is okay to indulge in food every now and then. You don't want to build any negative stigmas around that. But, you know, it's just you don't necessarily want that to be the norm. But it's okay, especially with family and friends, to go have a meal and, you know,
and
just enjoy that. That feels like a great idea, in fact. You know, but does your behavior match your goal? The more you're onboarding big, heavy feeds and lots of calories, the more your body is going to change in accordance with that behavior. So just got to know what you're getting into. But yeah, so that's important. And then you transition to temperature. Temperature is a big one. Temperature is one that I did not understand well enough early enough to maximize, but I am so glad that I get it now. Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have air conditioning in our house. We had some window units. So I would find myself in the summer, I'd be sleeping on a couch down by the downstairs window unit because I would get so hot. And I think back to that and I'm like, man, I wonder how many nights of sleep I missed out on. Because it's almost like sleep deprivation. You get used to sleeping in the warmer weather, but you might not ever get to sort of the ideal state where max recovery is happening. And it's one of the reasons people claim to sleep so well in hotel rooms, you know, nice clean beds but temperature control, you know, so temperature has been a big one for me. Temperature has been probably the biggest game changer in my sleep quality, aside from just like prioritizing and having the discipline to turn off Netflix and go to bed. And that would actually probably lead me to the last one. The last one is psychological stimulus in all its variations. People talk a lot about light, which is important, and I think that's true. But when you think about where the light is coming from down the final stretch of your day, I'll touch on the light thing just in case people haven't heard of it. There's this thought that if you have light coming in, blue light has been especially demonized.
Yep.
But the truth is that it's just about any kind of light. If light's coming in... You are not receiving signals that it's time to go to bed, theoretically, but truly melatonin, which is a naturally, you know, it's a sleep supplement now, but it's naturally produced.
Yeah.
Melatonin doesn't start to kick in the way that that would lend itself to a normal circadian rhythm. And you could potentially stay alert or in a state of arousal, like you mentioned, for longer. The sort of hidden piece of that is that, you know, you consider the source of light at that time of night down the backstretch of your day, and there's almost always a psychological, not almost, there is a psychological component there that ought to be considered. Like, what's the input? Is it mindless scrolling on social media? Is it a deadline at work that you're trying to figure out? Are you watching a movie? Because there's obviously like stress and there's reaction that goes on there. All of these factors are important. So considering not only the light that's coming in, but the source of like the media that you're intaking late is really important. And you think one way to think about that is go all the way back to when you were a kid and maybe your parents didn't let you watch a scary movie before bed. We should consider those things too. Are we getting all riled up by political commentary right before sleep? Well, we're going to have to wrestle through that before we can throttle down, calm ourselves down, and go to bed.
Yeah. So let's dig into this psychological stress, because it's something that we really haven't talked about on this podcast yet. And I'll give some examples of like what I see, because I know exactly what you're talking about in my life, and then I'll let you share like some things that happen that rile you up or things that you put away before bed to make sure you sleep well. One is so our brains like stories, and I hate going to bed if I watch like half a movie or half a TV show, especially if I haven't seen because it's leaving me like, well, what's going to happen? You know, and I need like this closed loop on it. Yeah. So I try to, it is something I've kind of gotten better at, because my wife doesn't necessarily always like to just finish things up. She's like, okay, we're going to bed, you know? But for me, that like bugs me, because I need to know the end. The other thing is if I in the middle of a project out of work or my business, like I know I need to finish that before going to bed, but not always finish it, just have like a to-do list for the next day done, put away, so then I don't have to think about it, and then I don't check any emails late at night. I shouldn't say that. I try not to check any emails late at night, because those are where all the fires come through as far as work and those kind of stuff. So I don't want to see anything that might trigger like, oh, what's this going to happen? Right. Or how do I deal with that? You know, they can wait till the end of the day. I have my phone to set on do not disturb at 8 o'clock, 8 PM every night. So then I'm not getting any of those notifications. Yeah. But I do have it still, so my immediate family can call and get through to me. But anybody else is shut off. Those are just some things that I've done. What about you?
I want to know more. Okay, so how do you, what's the setting? That's a really good tool that I think people should have. How do you set it on do not disturb? Like, do you click certain contexts that are exceptions to that? How do you do that?
Yeah, so I have a Google Pixel. It's Android. I know you can do it on any Android device. It's just in your settings. You go to your like do not disturb settings, and you can schedule then the do not disturb.
Yeah.
And then on your contacts list, I think it says like do not disturb except for these contacts.
Gotcha.
And then I have just starred contacts of any of my immediate family or in-laws. They can call or text, and I'll still get the notification and the ding and all that kind of stuff. So if somebody would call me in the middle of the night, I'd have it.
Does that work for iPhone? They must have something semi-comparable.
I'm sure it does. Yeah. I'm iPhone illiterate, so I wouldn't know. But
I got to look that up. Jace, that's a really good tool, right? Because I think you have – and that's such a – self-awareness is the number one skill that we try to support people with, self-awareness. And that is so interesting because – you know, people don't want to just shut down from the outside world. And I like this exceptions thing. I'm going to try to figure out how to use it on my phone, because to cut everyone else off at 8 p.m. actually seems really healthy psychologically. You know what I mean? I'm because like you said, you don't want to start a thread that you can't finish. And now that's on your mind as you're trying to fall asleep. But you also don't necessarily want to close out your mom or whatever, your sister who just bought a new house and might need help, whatever. So if you can create a little short, I would recommend people, a short list of exceptions, but shut down the rest of it. That's a powerful tool.
And it allows you to leave your sound on.
Yeah.
Right. So then you can, you know, you're going to sleep easy knowing that if your wife's traveling or if your kids are out traveling or whatever, you know, they can call you and you can still get a hold of you.
Wow.
But anyways, is there a routine or some things that you do that, or you tell your athletes to do or seen happen before sleep that really helps you get into that sleep mindset?
Yeah, I think, yes. The one I give athletes is especially important. Most of the work that we do with athletes is after the school day. So we start at like 3:30 or 4 o'clock, and you consider like a long practice would go, I don't know, say you're 6:30, 7, something like that. That would be a long day, but you get the idea. One thing that's really important for sleep quality is we try to front load hydration post training. And that's a big one. You probably know this, but if you're trying to make up for, if you're feeling dehydrated, 11, there you go. Hydrating as we speak.
Yeah. You said hydration made me thirsty. You gotta
go. But if you're feeling dehydrated at 10 o'clock, 10:30, and you're trying to, you know, get good rest for the night. So, but you're chugging water before you go to bed. Getting up to pee is a very real sleep disturbance, and that happens to everybody. And so that's one that we really try to be sensitive to. So front load, meaning as soon as you're done training, start the hydration process. We try to shut that down, within a couple hours of intended bedtime. That's a really big one for athletes, for everyone really, but for athletes. The food thing we already talked about, you know, and being strategic about that. And now that I think about it, one of the biggest things, Jace, that people miss out on is they forget to count. What I mean by that is they forget to count from their needed wake-up time backwards to figure out when they actually have to be in bed. So, like, let's call it a high school kid. They've got they start school at 8 a.m., say. Okay, and you've got to be self-reflective. How long does it take me to get ready? How long does it take me to get there? Whatever. To do this well, I've got to be up by 6:45. I don't know. But we'll use that as the number. Okay, 6:45. Well, if you're getting up at 6:45, you can't just go to bed when you're tired. If you're getting up at 6:45, you have to count backwards. So let's round that to 7, just so I don't look dumb and do easy math. 7, you're going back to 11. If you are, you must be in bed, you know, on the pillow, throttling down by 11, or you got no shot, right? And the real truth is you probably need, call it like a 15-20 minute buffer. So you'd aim at like 10:45 for a 7 a.m. wake up call. But as we've kind of been discussing, you can't just shut it down at 10:45. So one thing that we actually ask our athletes to do is, well, we start with these, go way back, we call them character by design workshops, but these purpose workshops. We ask them to identify one of their most poignant goals, one of the ones that has the most emotional resonance with them, and take that with them as a reminder as they progress through whatever their process looks like. And I say all that to get to this idea. If you've done your counting, here's when I have to wake up, here's when I have to be in bed, here's my buffer time, go an hour ahead of that, set an alarm with a reminder of your goal, and start throttling down for the night. So in that case, we got kids, if let's just use that, those numbers. At 9:45, 9:30, 9:45, it's conference championship, let's go, throttle, whatever. And then you start your pre-bed routine. You give yourself a little clearance to start ending conversations you might be having, finish up the last little bit of homework, decide whether or not you have time to finish the episode on Netflix, but you start that sort of reflective throttle down process. That's been a very helpful thing to it, to all of it. But the truth is, these are sort of, I mentioned, you know, five or six different like areas: temperature, psychological stimulation, habits, counting back, all these kind of things, what to eat. But the truth is, it has to be purpose driven. And that, like, that's the one missing component. What we find oftentimes is, like, especially in an Instagram age, a lot of young people are aware of the tools, but they don't know how to use them. So they might hear that, like, no blue light, for example, that's a popular thing, that's important. But if you're not driven toward this ultimate purpose and you're not intrinsically motivated enough to turn off the blue light, then your understanding doesn't align with your motivation well enough to change your behavior. So it is definitely, it's a composite picture. There's no one-off answer. It's necessary work. It's complicated at first, but much like a runner like you, that you develop a fitness for it, you know, and then all of a sudden you're doing these things and putting these pieces together in your life, and you find yourself liberated. It sounds like a lot of work. Once you've got it, it really is not. And you feel much better while doing it. So
yeah, it's all about just building the habit muscle to make it a routine.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
It does get harder when you travel, and when, you know, you put it in different situations and stuff. So we don't have a ton of time left, but if somebody was traveling, what are some kind of core tenets to say, like, these are definitely what you keep the same, you can let go of some of this, or is it all just keep the same as possible? True.
If you're talking about something like sleep, routine matters. So the closer you can get to normal, it is what it is. But that's why, so when I travel, and I pre-pandemic traveled a lot, I hope to get back to it. One of the things that I do while I'm on the plane is I just write, does your behavior match your goal? It's a mantra. It's not a thing that I throw out there. It's part of my life and everyone involved with our project. Like, I just ask myself, what are the next 2 days going to look like? I'm at a conference. I've got a presentation, say, at this time. I got to wake up at this time. I just think through it. The big thing is I forgive myself. I try to forgive myself pretty easily if I don't get my 8 hours sleep or whatever, but I also try not to get sucked into it. If I don't get 8 hours, there's something intentional. Like for yesterday,
right,
I had an early morning training about 25 minutes away, but that 25 minutes could have taken me an hour with traffic. So I just left extra early. I knew I wasn't going to get 8 hours. And I just made peace with that and said, okay, the next night I'm going to be really sure that I get 8 hours. I'm going to make peace with it for today. I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to manage it. And then tomorrow I'm going to be better. And that actually, just to bring the whole thing together, that comes back to, I think we talked about self-talk a little bit in our last conversation, but that's a powerful factor too, the self-talk. Like if you prioritize sleep, or you want to get sleep and know it's important, and find yourself in a situation where you're not going to get it, worrying about not getting it is self-defeating. So practice, I would say, is being grateful for the sleep opportunity that you do have, knowing that, like, your body's going to do its best to take care of you, and the next chance you have to get a full night's sleep, you'll go for it. You know, and you try to alleviate that stress.
Totally.
I found that to be very effective.
Yeah, you don't want to add to the lack of sleep by worrying about the lack of sleep.
Which,
right?
I'm sure you've been there for. That happens, dude. That is regular. That happens all the time for people.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Awesome. Well, this has been a great conversation about sleep and about mindset and about finding your purpose and really how that's going to connect to all of your habits. You had mentioned your podcast. It's called the Good Athlete
Podcast. Good Athlete Podcast. Right? Yes, sir.
Awesome. Yeah. So go check that out. Especially if you're a coach, go check that out. You also have more resources at thegoodathleteproject.com.
So goodathleteproject.com. We also have three websites now that we're building out. We have beyondstrength.net, teamembrace.net. Team Embrace is focused on embracing the conversation of mental health and athletics. And a new one that aligns with what we're talking about today, bedrockedu.com. So bedrock education, bedrockedu.com. Awesome. So building those all out to try to support coaches, athletes, parents, and just people moving through their lives.
Awesome. Well, Jim, it's great to have you back on the show. I'm glad we got to have this conversation. We definitely wouldn't have done it justice trying to squeeze it in at the end of last week. So thanks so much for being here. And everybody, go follow him on social and his podcast.
Thanks, Chase. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Episode's over. If you found value in this episode, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't already yet subscribed, do so now so you don't miss any important topics in the coming week. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, please send them my way. I am most responsive on Instagram. That's at jcheese, J-A-E, cheese, like the food, or email me directly at jase, J-A-S-E, at scienceofsportsrecovery.com. Talk soon.